Rants and reflections on the Bible by the skeptical, the faithful, and a few scoundrels. Kathleen Folsani and Jennifer Grant are here to talk about disquiet time.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
And that is the name of the program. I am the aforementioned Steve, the old white guy. And admit it, you like me because I'm a scoundrel, and you have a shortage of scoundrels in your life. Eric, the executive producer in the little glass booth, seldom quiet, always skeptical. Zach Van Dyke is our resident mega church pastor. He, of course, never misses his quiet time.
Yeah, I'm in Ecclesiastes right now too, so I'm kind of down. I'm not in a great place today.
Christian of the year always has to have their quiet time.
That's right.
Yeah, and should never be down.
Right.
Try to remember that, would you, Zach? You're not just doing this for yourself.
You're the pastor
of a mega church. A lot of people are looking up to you.
Thousands.
Don't screw it up.
Their soul depends on your spiritual growth.
All right, let's move on.
And the Reverend Canon Dr. Justin Holcomb is here. His idea of a quiet time is a few drinks.
No.
And the book of Ecclesiastes. He, of course, is an Episcopalian. And then Kathy really is the soft, faithful, feminine side of this program.
And today we're going to have, it's going to be, the women are going to almost outnumber the men, right?
That's true.
No, still 3-4.
Still 3-4.
So almost.
Put your cigars and your pocket knives.
With that kind of math, I'm curious what your mega church attendance numbers really are. That one's basic math. Everybody.
Right. I said almost. I didn't say.
Hey, we've got a new friend we're going to meet today, and an old friend we like a lot. The old friend, not because she's old, but because she's been our friend for a long time, is Kathleen Folsani. And she's an award-winning journalist, an author, great books, who specializes in the intersection of faith and culture. She was a longtime religion writer for the Chicago Sun-Times. And then Jennifer, our new friend, is a regular contributor to Christianity Today. She has a book, Love You More. And Kathleen and Jennifer put together a new book titled Disquiet Time, Rants and Reflections on the Good Book by the Skeptical, the Faithful, and a Few Scoundrels. Women obviously need some help from a guy. This, if you're going to do a devotional book, people need to feel warm and fuzzy and close to Jesus and in the garden and stuff. And you screwed it up. What were you thinking?
Well, I don't know. Our first mistake was probably coming to some old white guy.
There you go.
Listen, how are you, Professor?
Listen, I'd be really interested in both of you. Kathleen, you start, and then Jennifer, you talk about, really? I mean, what were you sitting around and say, let's offend everybody? Or
kind of.
I
sort of happened that way.
I knew it.
I know you're shocked.
She does have a book titled Sin Boldly. So I mean, this is in her system, I think.
I know.
Honestly, it started as a joke on Facebook, I think one Sunday night, where Jennifer is in the Chicago area, and I'm out here in Southern California where they keep all the heretics, and we were talking, I'm making air quotes, online one night, and somehow the subject of having your quiet time came up, and we were talking about how neither one of us has ever been particularly good at that discipline of quiet time, and with me on any discipline, actually, which I know would be shocking to you, but we started talking about how it would be kind of fun. I think Jennifer came up with the name Disquiet Time, to write a book that was an anti-devotional devotional book.
Only you, Kathleen.
Right,
Jennifer, you're going to hurt your you're going to hurt your reputation. You keep hanging out with people like this.
Too late.
I'm delighted to hang out with people like this. We talked so much and had conversations over the years before this about how troubled we were often left after reading the Bible. And so it just felt not so much like getting into, you know, hot water with anyone, but just sort of naming what we never say. We never say, you know, honestly, the Bible doesn't leave me feeling quiet lots of times. It leaves me feeling troubled and turned upside down and inside out. And we thought, let's ask, you know, wonderful contributors, including yourself, to talk about that.
See how much nicer she is than me.
First, that was actually, I really appreciate what Jennifer just said, but I have to go back to something Kathleen said real quick. And I just want to point out how discouraging it is to all these like budding authors that are trying to get published. And here you guys are with a joke that started out on Facebook, which became a book. And there's people who are just dying. They have manuscripts out their ears. They can't get it published by anyone. And their joke ended up as a book.
Well, we've been there as well.
It's not the first time either.
No. We have, what, 9 books between us, Kathleen?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about half of what Steve has. Good luck.
Now, look. Look, all kidding aside, you had a very serious reason for doing this, and I've got your, you know, I got your number, babe. I got this thing. I know that down deep, all of the obscene gestures and the laughter and the jokes, there is a person who really loves Jesus and wants to do this thing right. Yeah.
I think what we really wanted to do with this, well, I said this the other night when we were speaking somewhere, at the macro level, everything I do professionally and personally, at least what my intention is to help people understand how much they're loved by this God that we keep talking about. And so many people feel estranged from that relationship because of feeling unaccepted or unloved or judged by people who call themselves followers of that same God. And it was important to us that people be explicitly invited by us to engage with Scripture, because everybody is, and you can't do it wrong. And whatever question or doubt or fear or joy or you might have, God is big enough to handle, way bigger than we could ever imagine, way more loving and way more beautiful than we could ever fathom. And that's really why we went into this project.
Yeah.
Was to extend that invitation. And we're just delighted that, you know, 43 of our friends, including you, took us up on the initial invitation and extended that same invitation, that same grace and mercy, to so many more people.
Oh, that's so good. You know, I was going to do a book like this and ask 43 of my friends, but I could only find 2.
Well,
and
see,
it was really hard, man. I got to start working on this. Jennifer, there's a serious side of you too, isn't there?
Absolutely. And something that I'd like to add to what Kathleen said is that, you know, both of us and some of my work too with writing for Christianity Today and other publications, are really troubled by all the polarization within the church, within people of faith, and, you know, sort of the trolls online who are posting hateful comments to things. And, you know, I've written for newspapers as well, and honestly, the most vitriolic comments I've ever gotten have been when I've written for a Christian publication, which is sad. But this book, one of our goals for it, and I think we've met that goal, is to let people talk about their faith in authentic ways, and in ways that don't leave readers polarized, but more compassionate, more empathetic, more understanding of people who are different than themselves. So we've been delighted to hear time and time again in early responses to this book that people are saying, hey, I didn't agree with everything I read in that book, but I understand, you know, this person better, or this type of person, or someone who practices Christianity in this way much better than I ever have. I've never been in a room with someone like that. and now I get to read what it's really like to be them and what really shaped their faith. So I'm delighted by that.
Me too. We heard recently somebody said or wrote in a review that there's no central villain in the book. And yay. If you read this book and you really read it and you don't viscerally disagree with something or viscerally agree with something, then we did it wrong. But so far, that's what we're hearing, is that there's no onus put on the reader to have to agree, and there's also no onus for them to have to find someone that they consider the other or the enemy or a villain in some way because of what they're expressing in the book. I thought that was refreshing. Very wide.
Yeah, very wide variety of contributors, you know, from you know, someone who might be delighted to be called conservative to someone who, you know, would have a party to be called, you know, the most left-leaning liberal, you know, and so on. But we're not using labels like that to describe the contributors. We're really just asking, you know, we asked people of faith or people who've wrangled with faith just to tell their stories.
Hey, guys, our guests are Kathleen Falsani and Jennifer Grant. The name of the book is Disquiet Time, Rants and Reflections on the Good Book by the Skeptical, the Faithful, and a Few Scoundrels. You got to get this book. Don't read it early in the morning or late at night. Read it in the middle of the day and think about it. And then you can pray later for the salvation of the people who contributed to this particular book. The name of this program, Steve Brown, etc. Don't you forget it. I grew up in the mountains where there were lots of fireflies. I'd catch them and put them in a jar. Problem was, the next morning, they'd be dead. Jesus said to the religious people of his day that they would travel land and sea to get one convert, then make him worse than he was before. We do that sometimes. We put new Christians in a jar of rules and regulations, and their light grows dimmer and dimmer. And then they die. Christians, like fireflies, need to be free. Don't forget about God's unconditional love and forgiveness, and your light will shine. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Hey, share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence.
Our guests, Kathleen Falsani and Jennifer Grant, in their book, Is Disquiet Time, Rants and Reflections on the Good Book by the Skeptical, the Faithful, and a Few Scoundrels. Jennifer, you, in the last segment, you were talking about writing for Christianity Today and being sometimes blown away with the vitriol that you find on the internet. And I am too. I sometimes simply can't believe it. But I also think, and you might want to address this, that we, those of us who believe anything, if we really do, are generally passionate about it. And pagans are not very angry because they don't give a rip. So you don't really expect to have an internet where we all join hands and walk off in the sunset together, do you?
Of course, that would be so lovely, but I agree with you. You know, when the stakes are high about something, you know, about our faith convictions or our families or whatever matters the most to us at our cores, of course we're passionate about it, and we want to fight to the death to protect it and to maintain it and so on. But I think there's a difference. You know, some of the awful stuff we see on the internet doesn't seem so much like, you know, convictions and passion, but more like fear and more like anger that doesn't really promote an argument. And again, that's something I've loved about this book is that, you know, in some of the panels that Kathleen and I have done, we had some book events in Washington, D.C. and Chicago, and we've had on these panels people who couldn't be more different from each other. And the way they've listened to each other's stories, even watching, you know, two people who couldn't, honestly, who couldn't be more different from each other, tearing up at hearing the other person's faith story. That's not about losing their own passion or their own convictions, but seeing into the life of someone else and seeing what God's doing in someone else. And God works in all of us in so many different ways that, you know, it's so refreshing and nice not to have the shouting and the anger and the and all the hatred and the hackles going up, but to have a place where people can talk very passionately about something that matters the world to them without, you know, throwing mud on someone else.
Jennifer, go ahead, Kathleen.
I said, and by the way, we didn't ask anybody in the book to be nice. We just asked them to be honest. And I think that was really one of the profoundly interesting things to me as, you know, an editor of this book, was to see the different pieces about different scripture from just, like, incredibly different people coming in, all with the same kind of humble, surprising humility and humble tone to them. That I think when people really get honest, like actually get honest, there isn't that arrogance and there isn't that fear that we might see when we're functioning more from a cerebral point of view, you know?
But Kathleen, it'll be okay if you say it. I was, of course, the most humble one in the entire book.
Yeah. Obviously.
Jennifer, you said something in the previous segment about how reading the Bible, you don't come away feeling quiet, but disquieted or disturbed. And I would love to hear just a little bit more, because if you read, we were joking about, you know, Zach was talking about how he's in Ecclesiastes, and Steve mentioned that my idea of a quiet time is reading Ecclesiastes. Well, it's actually true. We're both reading Ecclesiastes, and it's messing with us. And there's plenty of other places. There's some weird things in Ezekiel, and there's, it's all over the place. But I'd like to just hear more of your thoughts. There was a one sentence that I'd love to unpack. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, sure. I mean, immediately, all kinds of verses flood my mind about that. You know, Jesus's comment about it's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than a rich person to get into the kingdom. That's a troubling one, you know, and one that I've heard preached on many times in many different ways, you know, and often the person preaching will find a way to say, oh, well, he didn't really mean that, and I wonder if he did. And I also think about the parables. The parables are not often left to make us feel comforted and quieted, but to raise a lot of questions and disturb the waters, you know. There's the parable about the people working in the vineyard and getting the same pay, whether they started at the very beginning of the day or if they came in the last half an hour. That one always troubles people, too, because of our sort of cultural sense of justice and so on. The part of the Bible that I wrote about in this book is in Exodus and elsewhere, where God says the sins of the fathers will be visited on the children for generations. And I heard that as a child, and that troubled me, you know, for decades. And so all those are some examples of that. But even just, you know, Christ's call to love and to be selfless, you know, when we really look at that and we're in a culture and a time where we're all about the individual and all about success and all about ourselves, to really explore and unpack what that would look like to live our lives for others because we're serving Christ in them, that's troubling. But I see where I fall short on that all the time.
When we asked people to write about what confounded them, we didn't mean that strictly in the negative, because there's some things there are a lot in the Bible that can confound you in a good way. I wrote about two things, one that bothered me in a negative way and one that comforts me and also confounds me in a positive way. And there are other people who did that as well.
I'm wondering, Kathleen, what was one of the most surprising things that you stumbled upon about the Bible from reading these other pieces? Because I'm assuming there are some things that you weren't expecting to show up, kind of like a gem that you found. If know, when you have all these 43 different contributors writing, and suddenly you realize, wait a second. So what did you learn, or what was surprising to you in this project?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, something that I learned that I wasn't necessarily aware of before, was in a chapter about the humor in the Bible, and that there's a passage in the Passion story where Jesus is sarcastic. And I never thought about Jesus being sarcastic. And he's sarcastic with Pilate, where he's being, you know, he's just been flogged and beaten, and he's brought before Jesus. And Pilate asks him, you know, so who is it that you say you are, or something like that, or says that aren't you king of the Jews, or something to that effect. And Jesus basically says, did you figure that out on your own, or did somebody else tell you?
I don't remember that in a text.
And you know, I've read that passage how many times, and I never caught the dark humor in that, which says a lot about Jesus, a lot of stuff that I maybe wouldn't have attributed to him in his humanity. And I loved that. I was surprised by that.
Oh, that's good.
But I think on a macro level, what really surprised us about all of
this. Well, we're going to use that as a teaser. Remember macro level.
Macro level.
And put your finger right there.
Yep.
As a bookmark, okay? And then we're going to return and continue talking about why you should not read the Bible if you're trying to sleep or have a modicum of peace or feel good about yourself or anything else in the entire world. The book is Disquiet Time, Rants and Reflections on the Good Book by the Skeptical, the Faithful, and a Few Scoundrels. Hey, are you looking for a Christ-centered seminary that gets grace? Do you need real ministry training? The kind that connects rich theology with where God has you? Consider Knox Theological Seminary. The folks at Knox know you're busy doing what God has called you to do. Work, ministry, family. That's why their residential program offers flexible class schedules, evening classes, as well as online video courses with monthly starts through Knox Online. And they're fully accredited. The Ivory Tower is meeting today's ministry needs. Check out the Knox website at knoxseminary.edu. That's knoxseminary.edu. And go visit them today.
At the end of day, when work was over, and when the evening meal was done, Dad would read to us from the family Bible.
Hey, you're listening to Steve Brown, etc. Our guests are Kathleen Falzani and Jennifer Grant, and their new book, which I hold in my nicotine-stained fingers, is called Disquiet Time, Rants and Reflections on the Good Book by the Skeptical, the Faithful, the Few Scoundrels, and one Republican, me.
You're not the only one, I promise.
Kathleen, you were saying Justin had asked you a question about what you discovered and things like that, and then you gave us an example, and then you said from a macro level, and I said, be quiet.
Yes.
We got to sell stuff in order to pay for this, but I told you to remember what you were going to say. Did you?
I did.
All right. Continue.
First of all, that verse about Jesus being sarcastic is John 18:34. I just looked it up. But on the macro level, I think Jen and I would both tell you that we were most surprised by the reaction of the contributors to the book about having free rein, essentially, to say anything and to write anything about any part of the Bible there are a lot of people who contributed to the book who are known and very well-regarded authors and theologians. There's some best-selling authors in there. And to a person, with the possible exception of you, we heard over and over again, you know, I really don't think what I wrote is that great. If you don't want to use it, I won't be insulted. Or, really, do you mean it? I thought it was really kind of terrible and not my best work. And people were so nervous about what they wrote. And I think it was because they'd been given this freedom that even though some of them are theologians and well-known authors who write about this kind of stuff all the time, they never did it this way before.
Steve, do you even remember what you wrote?
Of course. No, I really don't.
That's you wrote about ambiguity.
Okay, that helps.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. The name of your chapter is A High Tolerance for Ambiguity.
That's right. Why I'm on this program. That's why I'm talking to you guys.
I got a question. I'm at a church now, and it's a pretty diverse group. And I've found that if ever I move into an area where I'm talking anything about what's going on as far as the gay community, I offend everyone. I offend conservatives and liberals, and I've noticed that in this book that some of the contributors, you've got people from the LGBT community. I'm just wondering, was...
You forgot Q.
Did I forget Q?
LGBTQ.
Q.
Questioning.
Oh. Yeah, we'll get that.
I didn't even know that was
you
in there.
You are offensive. No
Shoot.
Wonder why everyone's angry at you.
No wonder they're angry at you.
Because I'm questioning and I feel left out.
Well, my question is,
queer can be either questioning or queer, actually.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway.
All right, sorry.
Either way, you still did it wrong, Zach.
Yeah, I'm sorry. All right, well, my question is, I'm sure that was an intentional choice on your part, and I'm wondering, what's been the reaction to that?
I'll let Jen feel more of this, but we haven't had any pushback, which is delightful, because... You know, if you read these, it's obvious that some of these people are gay and lesbian or bisexual, what have you.
Or questioning.
Or transgender.
Queer, or transgender. Although there are no trans... We don't have any trans people in the book, unfortunately. And we have... I don't know if it's that people don't know or haven't realized it.
No, listen, it would take an idiot to read your title and think there wasn't... I mean, it wasn't as if you lied about it when you did the... I mean, this isn't a grand secret.
No.
And Kathleen, you've offended everybody I know, several times. It's not as if people are surprised by you, okay?
No. Or Jen, for that matter. but we haven't had any pushback about anything in the book yet, which is totally flabbergasting because that's the first time this ever happened to me.
Well, and also,
yeah,
regarding the contributors who are LGBTQ, they represent part of the church that we wanted to hear from as well, people of faith that we wanted to hear from. And so we did want it to be as wide a range as we could, which happened, it fell out pretty naturally. Between us, we have a lot of friends who are wonderful writers and thinkers, and we did want to have a variety of contributors in terms of their ages and their ethnicities and their sexual orientation and so on. We wanted to hear from a wide group. And so there wasn't an agenda to say, hey, let's have, I don't even know how many we have, but let's have, four gay contributors. It was more like, let's ask all these people to reflect and so that our readers, regardless of where they are coming from, they will have someone who may reflect or challenge them or comfort them in their words. It won't be all of a kind. And we also have people like my dear friend Karen Swallow Pryor, who is the chair of the English department at Liberty. And so, she is someone with passion about her faith and a set of convictions that are different than maybe the person before or after her in the book.
Oh, man.
So I'm proud of that.
You ought to be. This is... You know, guys, this book is what the church is supposed to be about, but never is.
Amen.
It's not a group of people who eat Christian cookies and read Christian books and smile the same way and use the same words. We thought it was, and then we got out of our walled-in buildings and looked around and went, I'm going back in, man, where it's dark and cool and I can feel peaceful and comfortable. She was an atheist, and her daughter was in a hospital in a coma from an automobile accident. The mother got drunk, and then she drove home in the rain. In her driveway, she turned off the motor, and she started cursing. Then she started cursing God, and she knew how to curse. When she was spent, there was a silence, and in the silence, a voice said, "That's the first time you've ever spoken to me, and I love you." God is there. Even if you've never spoken to him, do it anyway. If they told you he would be angry, they lied. He'll love you, I promise. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
I want to walk away and start over again. I left my Bible by the side of the road. Caught my initials in an old dead tree. I'm going away, but I'm gonna be back when it's time to walk away and start over again.
You're listening to Steve Brown, Etc., and our guests Kathleen Fulsani and Jennifer Grant. And Jennifer was pointing out, or maybe it was Kathleen, that there was at least one other Republican beside me, so we began to look, and we found somebody from Liberty University that you mentioned, and I thought, thank heavens, and we went to her devotional in Disquiet Time, the title of which, "The Bible's Full of Crap." She's certainly not a Republican, and she may not even be saved. What are you ladies, crazy or something?
Well, as she says in that chapter, she says, she signs, actually, and she's talked to me about this, a statement of faith with liberty that includes the view of the Bible as inerrant and so on, and she completely embraces that. Her chapter, of course, is about the literal crap that's in the Bible. So she goes through and talks about all the poop in the Bible. Her first draft had it put somewhat stronger, but she chose to soften it for the book, sort of to protect her job, I think.
Yeah, that's why we voted on that, and we decided that others would have used a different word. So
the Apostle Paul did.
Sort of teetered about that.
But you know something? There's a serious thing here that I think is really important to make note of, and it's this, that the people who really, I mean, really believe the Bible is true, and most who say they do don't, they're defending a propositional statement and not the reality. If you really, I don't know of anybody who's more fundamental in their belief about Scripture, and he drives me nuts, is Tony Campolo. Mm-hmm. He's constant. But he really believes it, and that makes him dangerous. The man who founded Habitat, I can't think of his name right now, but he was a preacher with a PhD in Greek, believed every word of the Bible. And we had him at Boston University because we thought he was a liberal. And the first thing he said, "I believe every word of this, and that makes me dangerous." Mm-hmm. So I think this book... and it's the point that you're making, of course, is that Scripture, if you really believe it, is kind of, I mean, I wish I didn't. I don't want to believe this stuff. My life was a lot better when I didn't. Okay, you can comment on it, or we'll go to another question.
Well, this might be bad radio, but Kathy's over there giggling. And I'm dying to know what she's giggling about, so I'm hoping she has something to say.
I'm reading this chapter that Jennifer was talking about that Karen Pryor wrote, and I just had never thought about it, even during those times when I was really, really working hard at reading the Bible through every year, and I read through Deuteronomy. But, you know, it just, you're right. Obviously, you're right. You're the editor of the book, but, I mean, it really does talk about exactly what you said, and it says, I mean, you know, it's just, this one paragraph says, she says, you can't really blame the ancient Israelites or their God for a bit of preoccupation with waste in those pre-indoor plumbing days. Then as now, it had to be dealt with. And then it goes in and it quotes from Deuteronomy about going outside the camp with a shovel and, you know, and digging a hole and covering it up and everything. You know, I'm like, I don't remember this when I read through Deuteronomy. Do you remember that part?
No.
Have you ever preached on that?
I underlined it. Of course I preached on it. Are you crazy?
You sure you're not reading from Deuteronomy?
Oh, no.
Get the symbol out.
Hey, but, you know, I feel constrained.
Of course, for
those people who are just flipping across the dial
and don't know what they got.
Yeah, look. There are places of peace and comfort in the Bible. If there weren't, nobody would ever read it. Right. Occasionally, you encounter a God who loves you. Sometimes you feel forgiven. Sometimes you feel like, I can do this a little bit longer. Right, ladies?
Absolutely.
Well, and the way that Karen finishes that chapter, the last two lines, I think, are genius. She says, you know, it's the truth that excrement befalls, but Christ lifts us up and washes us clean, and that's noble. And that's the end of her chapter.
It is. That's a great. I was that's just awesome. Looking at that. What a great line. What a great line.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, and I wrote in my piece that opens the book about something that I found really deeply disquieting in a good way. And it's from my days in the Southern Baptist Church, and the chapter title is Just As I Am. And I'm writing about the verses that talk about us being God knowing us before we were here and knitting us together in our mother's womb, a verse that is often lobbied back and forth in the abortion debates, but that means something much deeper and different to me, that God knew all of the things I was going to say and the events of my life before I was even a thought. And I learned from the Southern Baptists, which was a tradition in which I spent about a decade of my life as a child after I was Catholic and before I was an Episcopalian, I didn't get all of the judgmentalism and stuff that the Southern Baptists are sometimes accused of being, rightly so. I did get a heavy hand of grace. And for that, I don't even have the words to articulate how grateful I am that I was introduced to a loving God who knows every last detail of my life before, now, and in the future, and still loves me just as I am. So there are a lot of things in this quiet time that are funny or that are difficult, and people are exercising pain and woundedness and doubts and fears, but there's also a lot of beauty in the book.
Yeah, it really is.
Saying, you know, even if I don't buy into the rest of it, this part means something to me.
Hey, we're out of time, and I use that word generically, by the way. We take a vote, and we've decided you guys have done a really good thing, and we rise up and call you blessed. I hope we can have you both back on soon. Assuming
anytime.
Nobody kills you or anything.
Okay. Pray for us.
Hey, thanks. Thanks a lot for being with us. Guys, we're going to back out for just a little bit, rest up, get back in the box, and we're going to say some things that are really religious, okay? Kathleen and Jennifer, their book, Disquiet Time, Rants and Reflections on the Good Book by the Skeptical, the Faithful, and a Few Scoundrels. If you come back, we'll tell you who we're going to do it unto next week. A famous violinist was asked why his music was so magnificent. He said, "I never play until my own soul is thrilled. And then the music is an expression of my soul." That's what ought to happen with Christians, but we fake it too much. I have a friend who told me that at his church they put lemon juice in the communion cup so people would look holy. Go to Jesus and just sit there until his joy, freedom, and love get into your soul. And then go play your music for the world. Too many people go to Jesus and leave as soon as they get saved. They should stick around a little longer, then their music wouldn't be so sour. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
Yeah, I say you'll see freedom. Yeah, I say you'll see freedom. Stop looking at the ground. Start looking at the leaves. Up among the dirt and rust is where the kingdom breathes. You'll see freedom.
I know. Some of you are irritated with us. How could we do something like this with people like that? I remember when they were criticizing Billy Graham for doing the same thing. You know, Mr. Graham has seen for a very long time that the church is a lot bigger than most of us think. We get in our little groups, and that's the very thing that Jesus prayed in John 17 that we wouldn't do. We're a bunch of needy, funny, crazy, in the box, out of the box, conservative, liberal, every race, every sin. That's us. Church are us. And until we learn, that doesn't mean that I have to agree. I wrote an introduction to one of Kathleen's books, man, and I thought every word. I can't believe I'm doing this because we don't agree on a lot of stuff. But that's us, church or us. And when we learn to love each other the way Jesus said, I know it's hard. That means you got to love me, even if you didn't like this broadcast. And I got to love you, even if you're a twit, and write me a letter about this broadcast, because this goes deeper than that. It's about Jesus, and it's what the church is all about, and it's how we see awakening when it happens. And I didn't say that. Jesus said it, that the world might believe. So if your kids don't, now you know why. Oh, I thought you were going to say something, Eric.
No, that's why I was pointing at Kathy. I don't want to talk anymore.
Yes, he took care of that, didn't he?
Well, I'm surprised. Okay, what is going to happen next
week?
Well,
you know, it's sort of odd how this happened, but, you know, Kathleen and Jennifer's book is kind of sort of like a quasi-devotional. So next week we're going to do another sort of quasi-devotional that's not so quasi because it's by Paul David Tripp. New Morning Mercies. It's a brand new devotional book coming out, and I suspect that it might be just a little bit different than Kathleen and Jennifer's.
Is Paul going to be at Liberate?
He is. He's going to be at the pastor's conference also, one of the speakers at the pastor's conference.
Oh, man, I'll tell you.
You told me you'd fire me if we didn't get him.
I didn't say anything like that.
Yeah, well, pretty close, yeah. Well,
I already feel like crap anyway now because the New Morning's Mercy makes me feel like I have to have quiet times in the morning, and I never do, so I got some stuff I got to ask Tripp now.
Okay.
Yeah, do you have to do it in the morning? If you don't meet Jesus in the morning, you won't have him with you the rest of the day.
Oh, that's, man.
That's from the pit of hell, and it smells like, I got to go. Our job is done. We've offended everybody, but we're going to come back next week and do the same thing over again. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. It gives you a wide, wide berth.
And bring the sunny weather, happy trails to you.